Gilat Rut, and Boaz has come out to the field and asked, who's this girl? She doesn't look Jewish. She's not dressed Jewish. But she's doing things that are different than everyone else. She's so careful not to take what she's not entitled to. She's so careful to bend in a modest way. She's so careful not to enter any fights. And so the lad says, you're right, she's a Moabite girl. She's not for you. But she's a kind girl. She's come back with Naomi. And Boaz summons her, and he encourages her, and he tells her that she can marry into the Jewish people, that Moabite women are permissible. And we discussed how he encourages her and gives her strength. And she comes back home with a whopping amount of food to her mother-in-law. We discussed that it's not clear how she carried that volume of food. And she sticks with Boaz's girls till the end of the harvest. And now we start perhaps one of the more sticky, difficult parts of Tanakh to understand. So if we read the Megillah plainly, then the story really is difficult. What's going on here? Naomi's going to tell Ruth, go down to Boaz, he's harvesting, he's winnowing, he's threshing his crops tonight. And when he's sleeping, so see where he's at, take a good bath, put on nice perfumes, and then sneak up, go lie down next to him. Why? That's not the Jewish way to do things. What's going on here? So the question is a good one. But before we continue, and don't ignore the question, before we continue, we have to notice that Tanakh is filled with good questions. I'll begin with the story of Lot and his daughters, to learn that the Moabite people come from Lot sleeping with his daughters. And the Torah describes it in a positive way. They thought the whole world was destroyed. They said, there's no man around. We're never going to have kids. There's no future. The only way is this. So we hear that, and yet the story is a difficult one. You continue in Torah, and you read about Yehuda and Tamar. And again, you say, what's going on here? He's a very holy man. But the act doesn't sound so holy. He thought she was a woman of ill repute. That's what the pasuk says. It's a pasuk. That's what the pasuk says. The pasuk. And then you move on to the story of Ruth, and you have to ask yourself, what's going on here? And then you move on to the Song of Songs, and you have to ask yourself, what's going on there? And then you move on to Megillat Esther, and you discover a Jewish girl marrying a non-Jewish man. He's the king. And again, what's going on there? And it's interesting that when you look at the five Megillot, Shir Shirim, the Song of Songs, yeah, Ruth, Eicha, Esther, and Lamentations, and Ecclesiastes, they all have an element where they're connected to a man and a woman. And in Ecclesiastes and Kohelet, you can understand parts of it. Then you have Ein Tov La'adam, you have a verse that says, I found nothing better than just find a nice girl and live out your life happily with her. That's the purpose of life. You read the Song of Ecclesiastes, you also have some questions. How Jewish is that book? Now, at first glance, you might not see that it's so Jewish. That's why Chazal were at odds about whether they should conceal the book. It says the rabbis sat and had to decide whether they should conceal the Song of Songs, whether they should conceal the book of Kohelet, Ecclesiastes. So we put a bunch of questions out there. There's a connection between the questions. And the answer lies partially in Shir HaShirim, where we're taught that the Song of Songs is the Holy of Holies. The Holy of Holies. Shekol HaShirim Kodesh, all other songs are holy. The Shir HaShirim Kodesh Kodeshim, and the Song of Songs is the Holy of Holies. Yishakeini minishikot pihu, let him kiss me from those kisses of his mouth. The pasuk says, "Kitovim dodecha miyayin." Your love is better than the best wines. And Chazal tell us it's the holy of holies. Chamukei yerechayich, the innards of her thigh. That's the pasuk. So Chazal tell us, don't read it that way. If you read it as a book of physical love, so then you're going to have questions, and then you really shouldn't be reading it. If you start understanding that there's greater depth here, and that the whole psukim of Shir HaShirim are talking about inner depths of Judaism and the deeper relationship between the Jewish people and God, and the metaphor is a relationship between man and woman, and perhaps that metaphor reveals to us that the most intimate parts of the relationship between man and woman can actually be holy and not hedonistic, but rather holy. So then you start understanding what's going on in the Song of Songs. We have a tradition, what each pasuk is describing. If we're describing his lips, what are we talking about? Siftotav shoshanim notefot mohover. Our sages say that's a specific description of the lips that speak Torah. If we speak about apech, her nose, which is like that Tower of Lebanon, what's the description of the nose? It's talking about the leadership of Israel. If we're talking about the neck, what's that talking about? Every part of the description is a different part of the Jewish people. But what happens in the book of Ruth? What is Naomi telling her? So the Targum tells her. The Targum tells us that the story of what Naomi is going to tell Ruth is just as Rivka tells Yaakov, go steal the blessings. You read that and you say, why would you be blessed if your father doesn't mean to be talking to you? What good is going to come of it? You show up to someone and he tells you, I'm going to write you out a check. Okay, Jack Schwartz gets $2 million and he gives you the check. But he didn't write out the check to you. What'd you get? But Yitzchak is blessing Esav. So what good is it for Yaakov to get those blessings? Did he gain anything by standing there and have Yitzchak say, Esav, you should have A, and Esav, you should have B, and Esav, you should have C? So what did Yaakov get out of it? So Chazal tell us, no, this was part of the heavenly plan. Yaakov had to do this. And that's what Rivka tells him. Naomi tells Ruth, she tells her, I'm telling you that I have a prophetic vision, this is what you're supposed to do. And what does Ruth answer her? Ruth repeatedly, Naomi repeatedly tells her, I'm going to do this. There's a creek teeth. Every time Naomi tells her to do something, it says, V'yaradta goren, I want you to go down to the grain. The way it's spelt is V'yaradti, I will go down. We have a tradition to read it as, you will go down. The pasuk says, you will lie down next to him, but the way it's spelt is, I will lie down next to him. Who's lying down, Naomi or Ruth? So we have a tradition to read it as, you will lie down next to him. But there's a yud there. The spelling says, I will lie down next to him. Who's doing it? Naomi's telling her, I'm telling you, I'm willing to do it. This is what Hashem said you're supposed to do. And when Ruth answers her, Ruth says, everything you'll say, I'll do. She doesn't say everything you said, I will do. She says, everything you will say. Ruth is saying, I don't know. I don't know. And all other matters, I'm willing to hear whatever you're going to tell me. You know I've listened to you, you know I will listen to you. But you want me to listen about this? Okay. But Ruth is wary. And that's why Ruth doesn't do exactly what her mother-in-law says. If you don't want to go with the Targum's interpretation, there are other interpretations to what went on here. I have a very hard time with them. I can tell you some of them, but I don't see how they really answer the questions. If you're not going to say that there was a prophetic understanding that this is how, what was supposed to happen here, so then you could say you can say that there was a custom along these lines, or you could say one other interpretation, which isn't so far off. But I'd rather stay with this one. So she tells her you guys have a better interpretation as to what's going on? Yes?
No.
Again, the commentaries bring other explanations, but I don't know how you can go with any of the other ones. Meaning, some want to say that he should have done something and he wasn't doing anything about it, and this was a way of telling him, buddy, you're supposed to do something, so why didn't they pick up the telephone and call him? I mean, what was the importance of this? Some want to say that this was a wake-up call, that he's seeing her every day and he's not doing anything. And Naomi says, okay, if he's not going to do anything, then show up there at night and ask him, what's supposed to be our next move? Catch him off guard, stun him, but don't touch him. Don't lie down next to him the way a woman of ill repute would, face to face. You lie down next to his feet and wait and see what he says. Again, all these interpretations are a little bit difficult. Boaz is a giant of Torah. Why can't you just go over and talk to him? There's another explanation that's given, which also has a certain amount of halachic weight, that before the generation of King David, if a woman was pure, then there was no biblical prohibition of being alone with her. So technically, what she had done was, she didn't initiate anything. She went to be alone with him. She was over on Yichud. Well, Yichud wasn't prohibited until David HaMelech instituted that. Right after David's son, Amnon, violated David's daughter, Tamar. So then David convened the court and said even a young man and a young girl are prohibited from being alone together, even if she's pure. Today, it's biblically prohibited because the women aren't pure. They don't go to mikvah until they get married. So it goes back to the biblical prohibition. But if Ruth went to mikvah, so then technically, legally, what she did was okay. It still begs the question, why do it that way? But if you remember that technically Yichud was not prohibited, and nothing was going to happen, she came there fully clothed, she wasn't trying to initiate anything, she was basically showing up at his door at midnight and saying, hi, life is not the way it should be. Maybe for you life is the way it should be, but for me life isn't. And sometimes you need to jar someone. Sometimes the way to get your point across is to jar someone. When I was a bachelor in yeshiva, guys would ask me, how are you? And I'd say, Baruch Hashem, lousy. And they'd say, what's wrong? And I'd say, you're married. When was the last time you offered me a shiduch? Your wife has friends. I haven't been on a date in weeks and months. Oh, it's so bad? Yeah, what are you going to do about it? I don't know, I'll think about it. So, you know, I would jar people. And that's how I reminded them, hey, you're learning next to me, I'm your friend, it's nice. And then when you come home for dinner, you forget about me, you go to your dinner, and you don't think that maybe you should offer me a shidduch. So, it worked. And then someone remembered, I got one shidduch, and another shidduch. Okay, eventually it worked. So sometimes there's a need to jar people. Others want to say that the message was along the lines of Yibum, that what Ruth was telling him is, when she uncovered his feet, she was telling him the idea of a shoe is the way Kabbalistically we describe the body for the soul, just like man spends his life standing in his shoes as he proceeds around the world, so too the shoe of the soul is the body. And so she was uncovering his feet and saying, there's a soul out there, the soul of my former husband, that doesn't have a shoe, and you're not covering it. You're not giving that soul a place to come into this world. All of these are interesting interpretations, but they beg the question, okay, why couldn't they do it the regular way? So if you say the way one of the commentaries wants to say, they kept trying. Naomi shows up at his field every day. She's there every day, and he's not getting the hint. Others want to say it was beneath their dignity to do more. That again, all these answers to my mind are more difficult. The answer that I have an easier time with is the answer that the Targum says. Naomi tells Ruth, I've had a prophetic vision, this is what you're supposed to do, go. That I can live with. You know, if a prophet tells you, so the prophet tells Yechezkel to lie on his side for a long time. And the prophet tells Yeshaya to do strange things and Yirmiyah to do strange things. So different prophets did strange things if the prophet tells you to do something. So that I could hear. There is a concept that's quoted in many commentaries, and that's the idea that whenever good wants to come to the world, so the Sutton wants to have his bite, so to speak. And good things always come through shady sources. So that if Mashiach's going to come to the world, it has to specifically come out of Lot sleeping with his daughters, where they thought it was a mitzvah and they did everything they could to do it right, but still, it's incest at the end of the day. And that's where the Moabites come from. And then again, the same story has to happen with Ruth and Boaz, and the same story has to happen with David's own parents, where it's not clear how David's mother got pregnant. For years later, they'd be questioning how David ever came to the world. And finally, with David, also the continuation of the Davidic dynasty is specifically through the wife, where there's room to question that whether David was legitimate in marrying her, Bathsheba, the one whose husband was executed by David, Bathsheba bat Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite, Uriah Ahiti. So there is this concept that in order for good to come to the world, it's going to come in cloaked. The more good something is, the less obvious it is in its appearance in the world. There's also the concept that the Gemara tells us that a person cannot obtain a position of leadership unless they have kupat shel shratzim me'acharav. Unless they have a history, the Gemara calls it like a sack of vermin. They're carrying a sack of cockroaches behind their back. Then they could obtain leadership. So Chazal tell us, David the Melech could only become David because he had a history where people would say, whatever happened with your great-great-grandmother Ruth? Wasn't she a Moabite? What happened there? So the fact that things would play themselves out in a questionable way was part of Hashem's plan, that good things should come to the world through questionable means. Obviously, there's a lesson in that for us. That sometimes a person would be tempted to look down at someone because of a questionable history, and we see the greatest people came from a questionable history. But again, to my mind, the easiest interpretation is the one of prophecy. It's interesting that this is recorded. Meaning Hashem could have said, keep it covered, don't tell anyone. I always find it humorous that all of Israel stands, or all of Ashkenazi Israel stands on Shavuos morning and reads Boaz tell Ruth, shh, al yivada laish, don't let anyone know that you came down here tonight. Right? The whole Jewish people read it every year. No one should know that you came down here tonight. We don't want people talking. So that's read publicly. But the flip side is that what's also read publicly is that nothing happened between them that night. Boaz said, I swear, nothing should happen. So now, with those introductions, let's begin our story. Naomi tells her, I want things to be good for you. Boaz is our relative. And tonight, he's going to take advantage of the wind to thresh his barley. and you should wash yourself and anoint yourself. What does that mean? So Chazal tell us, wash yourself and anoint yourself means cleanse yourself from Avodah Zarah and anoint yourself with mitzvos. What? She's so pious. What are you telling her to cleanse herself of Avodah Zarah? So there are many interpretations to this medrash, and they're all important. Interpretation number one is that although a person does giyul, and they've decided on a path of monotheism, that doesn't mean they've completed cleansing themselves of their past. There's the level a person reaches on the day they do giyul, which is a great level. They've converted. But that doesn't mean they've managed to cleanse themselves of their past. And what Naomi is telling her is, you're about to marry the giant of the Jewish people. You're about to become the mother of the greatest dynasty of the Jewish people. The only way you can take this step and succeed is if you're clean going into it. You have to clean yourself. And until this day, Naomi never said a word to Ruth. You're pious, you're wonderful, you're great, because she is. But now Naomi is telling her there's a new stage of greatness you're about to enter. You want to enter that stage, you have to grow. When my wife's grandfather became a great-grandfather, so we went to visit his Rebbe. He's a Vizhnitzer Chassid. So he went to the Rebbe of Vizhnitz. So the Rebbe of Vizhnitz looked at him and said, oh, you're becoming a great-grandfather, huh? You can't walk around with a mustache. Grow your beard. So the Rebbe told him, you're getting a new title in life. You gotta move forward. Sometimes in life, we want to move forward, but we're not prepared to prepare ourselves. Naomi tells her, cleanse yourself. I always say there's a stage in a person's growth. There's a stage where they start observing mitzvot. There's a stage where they know this is the lifestyle they're leading. There's a stage when they erase those female friends from their past off their Facebook page. There's a stage where you say, this is no longer a part of my present and my future. I'm building something new. A person shouldn't do it when he's not ready for it, but when he's ready for it, he has to know part of growth is cleaning out the past. There are other interpretations to this. I want to add one more, which I think is very important. What does that mean, anoint yourself with mitzvos? What mitzvos is she going to go and do now in the next minutes before she goes to Boaz? So if you wanted, you could say listening to a prophet is a mitzvah. If you wanted, you could say, bearing in mind I'm doing this for the right reason, is a mitzvah. But I think it's different. I think the word vasacht means put on perfume. Perfume is what you do so that others can smell. And I think that what it means is like the advice my mother told me when I started dating. My mother said to me, as part of the type of person you try to be, you try not to tell people what mitzvos you do. But when you're going on a date, my mother called me before my first date and said to me, when you go on a date, if the girl has no clue who you are, if you don't share with her some of the good things you do in life, then how is she ever going to know if she wants to marry you? You can't just go on a date and keep it to yourself, any positive thing that you did, because you want to be modest about it. You have to also find ways that in the conversation you'll share with her a little bit of the positive things you do in life. Maybe that's what Naomi was telling Ruth. I want you to put on perfume, Chazal say, I want you to put on mitzvos. That means she's going to go down there, and if she's going to be there feeling like, I have no right to this, I don't deserve this, I'm not worthy of this, I'm going to run out of here. Goodbye. I can't do this. I'm not worthy. No. When a person goes, a person has to sometimes remind themselves, I'm a good person. One of the difficulties I encounter with people who are on the verge of getting engaged is that they sometimes feel like they have to tell the other party all the faults that they have. They don't know what they're getting themselves into. Let me tell them my problems. It's a very common thing. It's a very common thing. Naomi tells Ruth, you want to go to Boaz, cleanse yourself of that which is wrong, anoint yourself with that which is right. Be able to stand there and feel like I've done all these mitzvot, I'm going in the right path. That will give you the strength to build the relationship with him. Wear your Shabbos clothing. From here we learn that a person should have nice clothing for Shabbos. and don't reveal yourself till he finishes eating and drinking. Okay? So she goes down there, and she only puts on her perfume afterwards. She says, not so smart to walk the streets with perfume on at night. People are going to think I'm interested in all kinds of inappropriate things, so I'm not putting on my perfume till I get down there. That's what Chazal say. Even when someone tells us to do something, we should apply our intellect. Understand what they say and how to apply it and to do it smarter. Boaz eats and drinks, and Vayitav libo, his heart is good. So we have a few messages here. Number one, he drank. It doesn't mean he drank water. It means he drank wine. And yet when he drank wine, Vayitav libo, he drank the right amount that it was positive for him. Vayitav libo, his heart was good. It's telling us the state he reached through drinking. And he comes to lie down by the pile. Chazal say he ate, he drank, he learned Torah, he prayed. He thanked Hashem that the famine was over. And then he goes to lie down by the pile because he knows that his workers are hiring women of ill repute and they are very capable of taking part of the grain to pay the women of ill repute. So Boaz wants to ensure that no one takes from those grains to pay their woman of ill repute that they might be bringing down to the field. Now when Ruth is going to come, what's Boaz going to think? Oh, one of my men hired her. And she made a mistake. She's coming to me. So Boaz goes to sleep by the edge of the pile. And he's sleeping. She sneaks over. She gently comes and takes the blanket off his legs and lies down. He wakes up in the middle of the night. He wakes up in the middle of the night and he looks and he sees a woman there. So he starts thinking, what's going on here? So his first thought is, she must have made a mistake. She's looking for one of my men. And his second thought is, well, now she's mine. Chazal say that that was his second thought. Chazal say, I'll read you the Targum. V'itrakich kelifta bisrei min retita. It says he conquered his desire. But that means he had desire. You know, we like to think of Boaz as this giant who looked and said, I'm not doing anything wrong now. Well, he said that, but after he first entertained the thought, that means he had a moment. The pasuk says, "Vayilafet." That means that he grabbed himself. He said, "I'm not going to let myself move forward with my desires." So, he asks her, who are you? She's awake. She didn't fall asleep. He was sleeping. Half the night passed, and she's not dozed. She's lying there awake and silent, waiting for him to wake up. She doesn't know when this night will end. So she's been lying there quietly. And when he asks her, who are you? She says, Anochi Rut Amatecha. And I want you to spread your wing over me because you're supposed to redeem. I'm in a state of bondage. I can't marry anyone else. So you do something. So he tells her, I'm going to do whatever you say. Everyone knows you're an extraordinary woman. And you're definitely worthy of doing the mitzvos. But someone else is supposed to marry you more than me. Limi halayla. I want you to sleep one more night alone, and in the morning you will get married either to him or to me. I swear by Hashem. Why did he swear? So one understanding is because she was going to think, you're pushing me off. You see, after everything I did, I even berated myself to come here tonight, and you're still pushing me off. So he had to promise her to show her he means what he's going to say. By the end of tomorrow, she will be married. The other interpretation says that as Boaz is talking to her and telling her, we're not doing anything tonight, we're going to wait till tomorrow, he realized he couldn't trust himself to not do anything that night. So he swore. He said, I swear by Hashem's honor, nothing's happening tonight. We're both going to wait here till the morning. And he swore because he knew that if he doesn't swear, he might not contain himself that night. And this shows us his greatness, that once he took a vow, he knew he would never transgress a vow. For us, I don't know if a vow would help us anything. So I'm not sure that's a good thing to do, you know, to swear and think that that's going to sustain me. You know, for him, he knew that once he says Hashem's name, there's no way he would do it. One of the hardest things in life is when something's a gray area. When you could say, technically, I shouldn't, but if I did, then it's still okay. That's where it gets difficult. Boaz is saying, technically, I shouldn't. But if I did, it's not the end of the world. I am entitled to marry you. He has first rights. But if I usurp him, it's not like it's the end of the world. So Boaz has to contain himself, because it's not so clear that it's prohibited for him to be with her right now. There's another thing which also sheds a little bit of light here, that when a person has a mitzvah of Yibum, they don't have to undergo the whole process of getting married like if a person did not have the mitzvah of Yibum. The assumption is that Yibum is a continuation of the marriage of the first brother. Okay, so they get up early in the morning. It says now she laid down there till the morning, and before anyone would recognize anything, he says, I don't want anyone to know that a woman came down here tonight. And he's very careful. He doesn't say, I don't want anyone to know you came down here tonight. He says, I don't want anyone to know a woman came down here tonight. He says, if people see a woman leaving here tonight, it doesn't matter that it was you. It doesn't matter what will happen tomorrow. It's not a good thing. So he sends her home with 6 stalks of barley. There's a message in that. 6 stalks of barley. He's telling her that she will have a descendant who will be blessed with 6 blessings. She will have 6 children who will be blessed. And when she comes, her mother-in-law asks her, who are you? In other words, if you're married, you're a different person. If you're single, you're a different person. Chazal tell us that a woman becomes different once she's intimate with her husband. She's a different person. It's a part of what Naomi is asking her, who are you? And she tells her everything that happened. And she tells her, look, he told me prophecy that I'm going to be the mother of the dynasty of kings and leaders of the Jewish people. And here's what he gave me. So Naomi says, stick around. Now we're waiting at home. He's going to deal. Boaz goes up to the Sanhedrin, to the high court. And a man walks by. So, who is this man? Says, the hidden man. Ploni Almoni. Ploni Almoni.
Has the right to marry her, right?
He's the first one who has the right to marry her. And Boaz gathers 10 men, and he tells him, my uncle, your brother, Elimelech, has a field that she had to sell, that Naomi had to sell. Are you interested in buying it? Because the relatives had to buy it. He said, yes, I'll buy it. Boaz says, fine. But you have to remember that when Elimelech died, he left behind sons. And one of those sons' widow is still with us. And just as we have to settle the land, we also have to settle who's going to take care of her. It's not just about land. So he says, I'm very scared. If I marry her, she's a Moabite. What will people say about my family, my lineage, my heritage? Boaz tells him, but the halach is you're allowed to marry her. A Moabite is permissible. So he says, yeah, you say that and I say that, but what do I know what people will say in a year from now and in 10 years from now and in 100 years from now? I could lose the genealogy. People will say my whole family's disqualified. You do it. So this is, again, one of those key points. The Megillah began with a paradox and it ends with a paradox. We know. The end of the Megillah tells us Boaz gave birth to Oved, gave birth to Yishai, gave birth to David. The greatest dynasty of the Jewish people came from this fine lady. But what is he saying? He's saying, I'm scared I'll destroy my family by marrying her. So here again, we have a very big message for the Gerim. Not everyone will know to value the Ger. Some people will say, I got to stay away. Who knows what it'll do to me if I connect to them? And we see who won and who lost. And there's a very powerful message here, which I only noticed this year, thanks to a speech that Malcolm Holmlein gave at Merkaz Harav a few days ago. Malcolm Holmlein was on the World Jewish Congress. I think he was president of the World Jewish Congress. And he spoke at Yom Yerushalayim. And he said, tell me, what were the names of the 10 spies that came back from Eretz Yisrael and spoke badly about the land of Israel? Who could name them? No one could. He said, okay, now tell me who were the two spies who spoke positively about the land of Israel? So everyone knew, Yoshua and Kalev. He said, that's the message. When people are naysayers, when they look down at something, no one remembers them in the end. When people are positive, everyone remembers them in the end. Ploni Almoni, after I heard that speech by him, then I realized that Ploni Almoni, that's what the Megillah is saying. Who remembers him? His name isn't even worth mentioning in the Megillah. There was someone. He's not so important. He was a person who was not willing to give confidence in Ruth. And our Megillah is about Ruth, who was willing to have the confidence, I'm going to go with what's right, even though I don't know what the outcome will be when I go with what's right. But that's what's right, so that's what I'm going with. It's so fitting to learn this as we approach Kabbalat HaTorah. Because receiving Torah is about this idea. It's about the kindness of Ruth. It's also about the statement the man makes every time he's faced with a mitzvah. He says, I'm going to do what's right. And even though I might have other desires, other thoughts, I'm going to do what's right. And so receiving Torah, what happened on Shavuos? We didn't get the whole Torah. We got the Ten Commandments, but we accepted the concept on Shavuot. It was Kabbalat HaTorah, the acceptance of the Jewish people to say, I'm going to lead my life by these principles. And so Boaz cuts a deal with him. He gives him his glove or his shoe. And with that, they cut a deal. And Boaz marries Ruth. And that night, they make their chuppah. They get together. And that night, Ruth becomes pregnant, and the next morning we have a massive funeral because Boaz has passed away. Boaz passes away right after he's had one night with the Ruth. And here we see also the importance of doing things quickly. This lends itself to the interpretation we said earlier. Why did Naomi have to have this prophecy that, go deal now, we're not working through intermediaries, now you have to get married? Because had they waited one more day, there'd be no one left to marry. So Hashem, for whatever reason, made it such that they didn't have time to deal differently. The harvest was over, Boaz hadn't acted, and now Naomi tells Ruth, I want you to go now. Ruth says, I'll do whatever you say. Well, the rest is history. From that one night came the Davidic dynasty, Oved who fathered Yishai, who fathered David.
Where we see that was only